Hello, Silver City and Grant County. You are listening to Earth Matters on your Gila Members Community Radio Station, KURU, 89.1 FM. My name is Nathan Newcomer, and I'm the Gila Grassroots Organizer for the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance, and I will be your host for today's show. The New Mexico Wilderness Alliance is a nonprofit organization dedicated to the protection, restoration, and continued enjoyment of New Mexico's wild lands and wilderness areas, especially our beloved Gila. On today's program, I'm pleased to welcome my dear friend and colleague, Nathan Small. He's based in Las Cruces. Nathan is the Wilderness Protection Organizer for the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance. His passion for the outdoors began early in his life, fueled by hunting, woodcutting, horseback riding, and fishing trips with his grandfather in the Cibola National Forest near Grants, New Mexico. He attended the College of Worcester in Worcester, Ohio, where he earned dual degrees in philosophy and English. He's also a former two-term city councilor of Las Cruces. As I mentioned, Nathan is coming from Las Cruces, and he got a little hung up on the way over here, so I apologize to our listeners out there that we don't have our guest with us currently, but he should be with us momentarily. And on today's show, we're going to be talking about the Oregon Mountains Desert Peaks National Monument, which was a monument that was designated 2 years ago by President Obama by the use of the Antiquities Act. It protects over 500,000 acres of public lands in Doniana County, including the Oregon Mountains, the Potrillo Mountains, the Aden Lava Flow, Broad Canyon, the Sierra de las Uvas, a lot of special places in Doniana County that our organization had been working on for, geez, probably about 10 years. The campaign started out as a wilderness protection campaign. We were trying to get wilderness designated in Doniana County for 8 different wilderness study areas. And over the course of 10 years, as I said, it took us from a wilderness campaign to a national monument campaign because we could not get Congress to pass any legislation. So we used the president's authority under the Antiquities Act to designate a national monument. And basically what that did was it permanently protected not only the wilderness study areas, but many other public lands surrounding these wilderness study areas. We will talk more about that and get more information from the guy that did all the work on the ground. So bear with us and stay tuned for more from Earth Matters. We'll be right back after a quick break. Welcome back to Earth Matters on your Gila Members Community Radio Station, KURU 89.1 FM. My name is Nathan Newcomer, and I'm the Gila Grassroots Organizer with the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance, and I'm your host for today's program. Nathan Small, we had an introduction for you while you were on your way over here, so welcome and thank you for making it to us today. I just want you to give our listeners a sense about your passion for wild places and how you kind of came to this.
Sure. For me, you know, I was so fortunate to grow up with a connection to the land. My grandfather, whose father came to the Zuni Mountains in Mount Taylor, where I grew up a great deal, spent a lot of my childhood. My mom actually taught at the prison down there for a while.
Oh, wow.
So we lived there for a while. And it was nothing to go out onto the public national forest, whether it was cutting wood, whether it was looking for piñones, piñon nuts, whether it was going hunting, of course, in the fall, or just taking a little break from work around their house. So it was imbued for me early on, and that love of the outdoors, just being in the outdoors, has continued on, and I've been so fortunate to get to understand how it connects to so many different parts of our community, and now to be part of the team and the community helping protect places. And we'll get to talk a lot about it today, I'm sure, but it's so much about people and place and the intersection. Right. And for me, you know, whenever I think of wild places, of course, one of my first memories, things that I think of, is my grandfather and his love of getting out there. And we've been able to be part of that with so many different people for some incredibly special places there around Las Cruces with the Oregon Mountains Desert Peaks.
So give our listeners sort of a brief description of the Oregon Mountains Desert Peaks National Monument and how historical,
yeah,
you know, its designation really is, because in southern New Mexico, we don't have that many protected public places, really.
It's true. It's true. Of course, we're very fortunate to be here with the first wilderness area, of course, right outside of Silver City. Oregon Mountains Desert Peaks, it is one of the most fascinating and diverse landscapes you'll ever find. Of course, the eastern backdrop to Las Cruces, a famous, world-famous backdrop, are the Oregon Mountains. They were called, first got that name, Los Órganos, with Spaniards who are traveling up on what became the Camino Real. And they rise over 9,000 feet just outside, and anywhere in the city you can see those spires. So just east of Las Cruces are the Oregon Mountains. A little bit northeast are one of the recreation hotspots, a place called the Doñana Mountains, outside of the village of Doñana, a place where they have the Horny Toad Hustle bike race every year. And there's just really vast and diverse opportunity for recreation. Now, if you hop now west over I-25, northwest of Las Cruces, begin the Robledo Mountains. They, again, people in place, named for Pedro Robledo, who drowned in the area as one of the first folks coming up with the Spanish explorers. He, in fact, is related. There's all these connections. He's related to a wonderful living member of our community, a gentleman by the name of J. Paul Taylor, who is a renowned state representative, conservationist, and educator in his own right. The Robledos go right down to the Rio Grande. In between them is this great maze of canyons, places like the Cedar Hills, rich complement of wildlife. And then that connects with the main connector being a place called Broad Canyon that is full of cultural legacy back to the northwest anchor of the National Monument, which are the Sierra de las Uvas, or the Grape Mountains. And they actually have, still to this day, the wild grapes growing around a spring there at their very northern extremity.
Now, is the monument, is it one big monument, or is it kind of divided up into pieces?
Great question. Better way to say, I should have summarized first. So it's basically four pieces, and really three. The Doñana Mountains and the Organs are connected on the east side. The what's called the Desert Peaks, which are the connection between the Robledos, the Sierra de las Uvas, and all the way up to the in the Corralitos grasslands. Those are the northwest piece. That's piece number two. And then the southwest piece is the Potrillo Mountains complex. And that's this big cinder cone complex that has very high points. Mount Cox and Mount Riley go up over 6,000 feet. Very low places. Aden Lava Flow and Kilbourne Hole actually drop below 4,000 feet. And it's a very vast desert grassland mosaic that is one of the most important areas, especially for sportsmen and for wildlife.
And what's the acreage total on this monument?
So it's close to about a little under 500,000 acres. And it was, at the time it was designated, it was one of the larger ones that this administration had done. But the connection there is so important to people, again, people and places. So a southwest anchor for the Sierra de las Uvas, which we were just talking about, are things called the Deming bombing targets. And this was an area that helped train pilots and crews who would go on to fly and fight in World War II on the Norden bomb site that was just coming into existence. And they would drop essentially these bombs filled with flour. So there's not big giant craters out there. You just have the remnants on an area with concentric circles, kind of a giant target. And when you fly in the air, you can see those. In the same place where you'll find those out in the grasslands, and of course you'll find quail and javelina and other wildlife, you also see the Butterfield Overland Trail that traveled through that area, the first overland mail route for the area. And so this overlapping layer of values and connections to people, to places, to different times in our history really set the boundaries that the community advocated for to protect as part of the National Monument. And of course, all of these lands before designation and now after designation remain with the Bureau of Land Management. Many of them got included in a special new system I hope we get to talk about a little bit, the National Conservation Lands. So they were public before, they're now public after, but with the with a lot of extra special things that come with being part of those national conservation lands.
You are listening to Earth Matters on KURU 89.1 FM. We're talking with Nathan Small, the Wilderness Protection Coordinator with the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance, and we'll be right back after a quick break. Welcome back to Earth Matters on your Gila Members Community Radio Station, KURU 89.1 FM. My name is Nathan Newcomer, and I'm the Gila Grassroots Organizer with the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance, and I'm your host for today's program. On today's show, we're talking with Nathan Small, who's the Wilderness Protection Coordinator with the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance, my dear friend and colleague. So welcome back to Earth Matters, Nathan.
What a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
So we talked a little bit about the Oregon Mountains Desert Peaks National Monument. I was wondering if you could give folks a sense of how this all started, because this has been a long-term effort. I mean, absolutely. You could go way back to the 70s and 80s even, but really more or less what I'm trying to get as the campaign itself
sure.
to protect these places.
As they say, to make a very long story a little less long, perhaps. So it's very important to identify the beginning going all the way back to the mid-1980s. That was when these areas that are called wilderness study areas were identified in and around the public in the public lands near Las Cruces. And we have, of course, New Mexico State University there. We had a lot of great folks who grew up in New Mexico, some who came to New Mexico, connected to the university. Some were sportsmen. Some just liked to go out, were part of Audubon and birders. So they knew these lands extensively, some who were grazing permittees in the areas, and they knew the value of these lands. And that was recognized by Congress as wilderness study areas, which were created there in the 1980s. Fast forward to, there were different attempts, because that is a temporary protection and a temporary designation. As Las Cruces grew, and it's now, of course, the second largest city in New Mexico, there was increasing worry about the fragility of these places. And so you had different local folks, again, sportsmen who were part of organized clubs. You had folks who part of the League of Women Voters and others, folks who were there in the city, who maintained a dialogue about how special the places were and how to pass that on. And so then around 2005, 2004, with the wilderness study areas there, then Senator Domenici initiated kind of a process or a discussion about protecting and designating those permanently as designated wilderness.
Now, wasn't there a caveat to that, too?
So there's sometimes there's a catch, and something that I think has resonance, very strong resonance today with what we see with some of the public land seizure efforts. There was a kind of a piece to that that said, okay, there can be some wilderness designation, but we'll also have massive sell-off of BLM public land around the city limits. And up to, estimates were as high as 70,000 acres. For context, that would nearly triple the size of what was then the city. And so there was really deep concern that while protection and conservation were of paramount importance, it was not fair. And it was not in the best interest of the community to pair that with such massive sell-off of public land.
Yeah, and if I recall correctly, the community was really strongly against that.
Yeah, one of the best things through this entire effort have been the various people, organizations, together really the partners in the community that first came together to say, yes, we want wilderness. Then added on to that and said, no, we don't want large-scale public land sell-off, and stayed together from 2005 all the way to 2014 and now remaining together to say, to keep communicating how they wanted and how we wanted conservation and management to happen. And that really led through a long number of years. It led directly to the designation of the National Monument and continued recognition that wilderness designation is of very high importance, and I think an increased interest in how to manage and make those lands an even more vibrant part of the community that is surrounded by public lands.
So it started out as a wilderness protection campaign, essentially, back in the early 2000s.
Right.
And then
right.
at some point, we had to make a shift,
yeah.
sort of a segue into a monument. What were the sort of different iterations of that campaign? How did it evolve over time?
So I think one of the best ways to see that are through the eyes of the different people who got involved early or who were involved early. And, of course, some of the earliest were the different conservation groups, sportsmen, who knew the wilderness study areas for their, just the best scenic values, the most wildlife, everything like that. But as it became really kind of clear in two ways, one, that Congress, even after marking up and passing the wilderness legislation through the Senate Energy Committee under the then leadership of Senator Jeff Bingaman, who was a stalwart champion of the entire effort, the recognition that the rest of the Congress was just not going to act, and number two, the recognition that a national monument designation offered the ability to not only protect the wilderness areas, the core wilderness areas, but also those places like the Deming bombing targets or places like the Butterfield Overland Trail.
Places that aren't necessarily wilderness quality.
Right, that had, have more, for instance, roads, county roads that were out there, different other features that they were still very worthy of conservation. So there was kind of the recognition that the light had turned red, I guess, in some ways, on one avenue, and then that, in fact, by making this shift that helped bring in more people, more values out there on the land, that light was kind of going from orange in the shades of green. And so folks, I think, saw there was just such incredible excitement from so many different folks across the regular lines that we think of dividing, kind of separating us from other members of our community. There was just this really groundswell of connection to these places, and as each new layer and each new value was uncovered, in fact, the Los Angeles Times just yesterday ran a story about the connections to Wild West history with Billy the Kid, to the race for space and the Apollo training that happened out at a place called Kilbourne Hole.
There was the Apollo training missions out in Doña Ana County.
Yeah. In Doña Ana County, out at Kilbourne Hole, a feature that we as residents and citizens of this great nation can go out and visit just on our own. These things, I think it ended up, while there was great disappointment that all of the work that had gone into crafting the right plan for wilderness designation, and again going out to identifying key access points and roads for folks like sportsmen and others to make sure and have identified, much like the road that goes up to the Gila Cliff dwellings that surrounded by wilderness in many areas. While there was disappointment that all of that local work didn't yet have its day on the national level, as far as there was recognition that we could take that same approach of working together, finding values, finding connections, and bring in this national monument that took a lot of positive steps and really secured very important things for the community. Things, in fact, which we're seeing now as 2016 begins, already begin to bear fruit that are fundamentally leveraging benefits in our community.
Can you tell us a little bit about the differences between a monument designation and wilderness designation? And also, on top of that, now that you've got a national monument, is there more work to be done to protect the wilderness study areas that are still out there?
Absolutely. So the basic difference, there's key similarities. Inclusion in the National Conservation Lands, which is a BLM system that essentially identifies the crown jewels of BLM-managed lands, mostly across the West. But there's also those differences. Wilderness designation has a much clearer formula. It has long-established guidelines, long-established methods of implementation. National monuments, in their purest form, really withdraw an area from what's called the land and mineral leasing laws, so an area cannot be sold, much to the...
Or developed,
much to the disappointment of a very small few who would like to sell off all of our public lands or giant swaths of our public lands. So that's the key thing. And then it calls for a management plan specifically for that area, for that the area of the National Monument, to help determine things like travel routes within the National Monument. There are... A key part of the proclamation, of course, monuments can be designated either by the administration and the legislative branches of government. And we've seen other places like White Sands be designated by the administration, by the executive. But in each proclamation, there are what's called the objects.
Yeah, tell us about the proclamation, too. Like, what is that? And, like, so you can kind of craft what the monument looks like, right?
Right, and this is so important. You know, there's so much local input at each level. And as a resident of Las Cruces, somebody who's been fortunate to be involved in many different parts of the community there, folks, every time folks had an interest in trying to help be part of that, there was an opportunity to do so. And a proclamation is both the uplifting and poetic description of an area, and there's that opportunity abounds there in Las Cruces for the Oregon Mountains Desert Peaks, and also identification of some of the most important resources in the Oregon Mountains Desert Peaks, like many areas in New Mexico, but perhaps with extra emphasis there. We have this overlapping and layering of cultural, historical, and natural values that, you know, are right there in the same area where you can find, again, you know, the Deming bombing targets close to petroglyphs from left by indigenous communities, right next to the Butterfield Overland Trail that brought mail across the United States, was in the territory, next to where the boundary used to be between the United States and Mexico and was changed through the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo. Those objects, along with the geologic resources, with the wildlife that's found out there, and the activities that take place out there that are from a modern-day community, can go into those objects, which are specifically identified within the proclamation, and then that in turn helps guide the management. So a simplified way after that long speech is the things that a community and experts both in and outside of that community identify as the most important pieces of their public lands, then transfer directly into the monument proclamation that guides management of those places. So you get a community that can say with specificity, what are the most important things here? What are the things that we're most proud of? And then that helps guide local on-the-ground protection, permanent, and management ongoing.
You are listening to Earth Matters on KURU 89.1 FM. We'll be right back after a short break. Welcome back to Earth Matters on your Gila Members Community Radio Station, KURU 89.1 FM. My name is Nathan Newcomer, and I'm the Gila Grassroots Organizer with the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance, and I'm your host for today's program. We're talking with Nathan Small, the Wilderness Protection Coordinator for the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance, my dear friend and colleague. Welcome back, Nathan.
So, just tons of fun to be here.
It is tons of fun. We're talking about the Oregon Mountains Desert Peaks National Monument, and I wanted to kind of just wrap up on that last discussion, the sort of the differences between a monument and wilderness areas. some people are kind of confused about monuments, and I know that when this discussion was happening, that some folks were saying, well, if you create a national monument, you're not going to be able to do certain things. And but can you tell us, like, any of the truths and falsehoods about that?
Yeah, so a national monument, with the exception of new, for instance, mining claims, in some cases new rights of way, everything that and new minerals, if a mining claim was established before a national monument was designated, everything, whether it's wilderness or national monuments, always say valid, subject to valid existing rights.
Right.
If those property rights exist before that designation, then those property rights absolutely exist afterward. So there was, you know, there was concern, and national monuments in particular, I think a big part of what we had in decades past thought of them as are very similar to national parks. And, of course, White Sands National Monument, just to the east of Las Cruces, world-renowned. It's a good example of that. It was actually managed by the National Park Service. But because of the conservation, the National Conservation Lands, you have BLM, the Bureau of Land Management, the land manager that we're all very familiar with, that then manages the national monument. And so everything that, again, the things that happened before happen afterwards. The state remains the manager of wildlife. So
for hunting.
Right, fish and game species, whether that's for hunting or what have you. And so there was, I think in some cases, questions raised in very good faith, you know, folks, and always, you know, when wanting answers, folks, the best thing is to provide more information. I think in some cases, unfortunately, sometimes to kind of perhaps mislead folks within the community into thinking that they couldn't do things that they then enjoyed out there in these places. But through, again, the community input process, through the advocacy that was really just based on helping communicate values out there, helping get people out onto the land, and then helping all of us tell our story from different perspectives, it became very clear that far from losing something, what we were gaining were all the wonderful things we enjoyed out there on the land before designation, and we were gaining that opportunity to pass those on and to enshrine those, again, through the monument objects and in other ways through the management plan, as a way to give assurance both to ourselves and others in our community, nationally, frankly, internationally. We're now seeing interest from a lot of folks in coming to the area, that the same values, the same opportunities, the same recreation potential that was enjoyed, that we enjoyed just by living there, could also be passed on and be something that 50 years down the road, climate and other things pending, we can offer those same opportunities and those same places and those same values will be there for others to experience.
And now that the monument's been designated, people can obviously go visit it currently, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. We've seen anecdotally visitation rise. The numbers at some of the areas, the few areas where currently it's measured now, have shown upticks. Folks can visit the Oregon Mountains Desert Peaks National Monument and get information in a number of ways. Of course, they can contact the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance and other local conservation and, frankly, national conservation organizations. The local Las Cruces field office for BLM has undergone really an exciting, I guess, evolution, where we now, they're soon likely going to be hiring a monument manager. There are additional staff recreation planners, even law enforcement, others who have been brought on, archaeologists, to help both, again, at its basic level, manage, protect, and share with the public the resources that are part of the National Monument. So folks can go to the BLM Las Cruces on the web even, and frankly, perhaps the easiest way is just to Google Oregon Mountains Desert Peaks, and there are access points. There's a new hiking guide that the Southwest Environmental Center did. Of course, the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance releasing soon a wild guide. There's the Las Cruces Green Chamber of Commerce that has a visitor's guide. That same community pride and support that really allowed for the designation is now only magnified, I think, after the designation in helping to manage, protect, and share, sometimes, of course, for businesses as well, the resources that are just so extraordinary. And we're even seeing, for the longest time, of course, the Oregon Mountains were, as part of the very fabric and identity of the community, so many different businesses. I had some variation of that name or of the iconic spires that first inspired the name Los Órganos. It pleases me and others to no end that now we have new businesses or businesses that are expanding, beginning to take on other features. And so we have the Desert Peaks, I think it's the Desert Peaks Assisted Living Center. And we're seeing this because for so many, we could see the Oregon Mountains, but folks might not have known about all the wonderful values in the Desert Peaks area, part of the Robledos and the Sierra de las Uvas. Now that that's more known, we're seeing that same pride reflect itself in the community, and you're having, again, these businesses and others taking on and sharing that in a really exciting way and in a beneficial way for the community.
So through the designation of this new monument, it sounds like you're seeing businesses are growing, jobs are coming, you're getting more tourism, more visitation. Is that accurate?
So we are definitely seeing more visitation, no doubt about it. And it seems like the tourism numbers, which are measured best by hotel room stays and others, unless you have a trail counter at each place, we are seeing those increase. We are seeing new businesses absolutely take shape directly connected to the National Monument. Folks are applying for climbing permits, additional guiding permits, for horseback riding permits and things like that, vehicle tours within the National Monument. Those businesses are absolutely forming, so we're seeing an increase there. What we've learned is that you start together, you work and build together, and you stay together. And so now new opportunities, like perhaps celebrating National Monument Month in conjunction with other festivals held in Las Cruces and in the surrounding area, are ways to add on to the increase in visitation. What we hope, the increase in folks who choose to come to the area because of its proximity to the National Monument, we've again heard anecdotally of that. And in New Mexico, where our entire state is facing some very difficult economic times, things like entrepreneurs, folks who solo workers, they're called, who are consultants, who offer services, very excellent services to a variety of clients in and outside of the state. They can choose where they want to live, and having those protected lands, we think, are absolutely a benefit to having them there in the area. So we're seeing benefits, no doubt about it. We have some incredible success stories to point to, but again, we've learned that start together, stick together, work together, and then, you know, stay together and keep trying to bring as much benefit.
Well, in the vein of staying together, yes. What's next? What's on the horizon? You mentioned the National Monument plan.
So we're very hopeful that the management plan for the Oregon Mountains Desert Peaks that really is quite important. And these take a while. They can take a while. 5 or 6 years, perhaps. But they, on basic questions like travel routes within the National Monument, and also on subtle and important questions like management of cultural resources and how to help share those resources without damaging what are really guiding pieces especially for indigenous communities within the state. And so it's something that has a great deal of importance that'll govern, establishment of new recreation areas, new trails, trailheads. Really, once you start looking into it, restoration and the opportunity to, as we've partnered in the past to restore grasslands through the Restore New Mexico program, all of those pieces have perhaps their most important home in the management plan. So we expect, we hope that the scoping for that begins this year, 2016, hopefully sooner rather than later. And that's going to allow everybody who was a part of the designation and everybody else who wants to be part of the management to register their thoughts, their hopes, their concerns, their ideas, our ideas about management in the public scoping with BLM. And that's a unique feature, frankly, of public land, right? These public lands, whether it's on the National Forest up here by Silver City or in Bureau of Land Management, federal public lands have a uniquely wide opportunity for public comment and for public participation. We, and I think the management plan is only going to expand that there in Las Cruces. Of course, we still have these wilderness study areas. They've been in place, again, most of them since the 1980s. It's a temporary designation that can only be changed by Congress. And there are certainly benefits that come with that. There are also, in many ways, kind of a more concrete guidelines that can limit some of the things that folks would like to, the community would like to come together around. Restoration and other things can be more difficult within wilderness study areas. And the importance of wilderness, whether it's as refuge for wildlife and for habitat for wildlife, whether it's for protection of some of the most significant cultural resources that have been placed in these areas, whether it's for those within the state, the nation, and the world who really seek out that more wild experience and travel to areas specifically because of designated wilderness. All these various values, things still call for designation of wilderness within these areas. Appropriate, and really one of the most the things that I'm very, I think I and others are very proud of, is that the same agreements, guidelines, and really community pacts that were identified going all the way back to 2005, 2006 about the road network, what kind of known as the cherry stems, again, like the road that goes to the catwalk. Those same agreements may now, going on over a decade ago, still guide the pursuit of wilderness designation. And that kind of long-lasting community involvement and agreement are, you know, that's something for us, I think, to celebrate and to enact.
You are listening to Earth Matters on KURU 89.1 FM, and we'll be right back after a short break. Welcome back to Earth Matters on your Gila Members Community Radio Station, KURU 89.1 FM. My name is Nathan Newcomer, and I'm the Gila Grassroots Organizer with the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance, and I'm your host for today's program. We've been talking with Nathan Small, a colleague of mine, the Wilderness Protection Organizer with the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance based in Las Cruces, and we've been talking about the Oregon Mountains Desert Peaks National Monument on today's show. Welcome back, Nathan.
Thanks for having me.
So one thing I wanted to get into in our last segment today is this whole idea. We talked a little bit about it in sort of the history of the Oregon Mountains with getting rid of public land or public land seizure. We've seen something going on up in Oregon with people arriving with, you know, rifles and guns, seizing a federal building and, you know, saying that one of their demands for leaving this federal building is to have public land given back to states or given back to, like, landowners. Can you talk to us about that a little bit?
Yeah, you know, I think it's something that with the Oregon Mountains Desert Peaks always as the backdrop, but frankly, with my childhood, and I think with the childhood of so many here in New Mexico who use public lands in so many different ways, it's very near to an existential threat that threatens, in effect, the very fabric, the very texture of the state here in New Mexico and of many areas within the West. the first, you know, like we've talked about, the wonderful people, and whether and you know, somebody who we've talked a little bit about, some of the sportsmen, some who own small businesses, Jim Bates, John Moe, and others who were part of the effort, the others who are part of the League of Women Voters and many other organizations. I also think of folks like this woman, Gracia Nunez. Now, she grew up south of Las Cruces in a community, small, unincorporated community called Vado. Through opportunities that she availed herself of, things like Groundworks Doñana, she was able to help work out on the public lands, doing trail restoration, doing archaeological survey. She is now headed to the Peace Corps, but is looking forward to coming back. For her, for the folks who go and gather pine nuts up north, for those of us and folks just came down for big national magazines touring the Oregon Mountains, Desert Peaks, in part to go quail hunting, those who like to go hunting out on these lands, those who just like to take a weekend trip out with their families to public lands, that seizure and transfer movement will, I'm convinced, and I think there's so many in our state who rightly recognize that it would end that opportunity and end that heritage. So it's a very deep threat in that sense, because as federal public land, the opportunities for public comment, the opportunities to directly petition whether local or national leaders, all the way up to the President of the United States, to get things like the National Monument done, those things would dwindle and I think ultimately disappear should these lands either be seized, as we see some of the most extreme examples where, in effect, folks simply declare that this public place that everybody used to be able to enjoy is now mine or theirs or his or hers. Instead of ours to enjoy and to manage, to properly protect, or perhaps more subtly, through transfer to the states. And there's a great, we hear many voices that proclaim, well, we just need to transfer this to the states. Now, I think in that more subtle form, they attempt to recognize, folks who advocate for that, they attempt to recognize just how important public lands are. And the fact that we take our families out there for recreation, take kids out there for education, we harvest resources from there, and in turn, we care about the resources that are based out on that public land. Folks recognize that, and they say, well, if it's managed by the state, it's still public, and you know the state can decide, and folks can go out there. But we have concrete examples that show that's just not the case. I can go camp on BLM land right now.
For free.
For free. Something that surprises visitors sometimes who come here. Something that when we grow up here, move here, live here, becomes, again, part of that fabric of why we choose to live here, spend our money here, et cetera, raise our families here. But on state land, that's not the case. And, in fact, the current land commissioner for the state has really very clearly, honestly, transparently, and with members of his staff, repeatedly said the lands are not public. And there was a what could have been close to a disaster for sportsmen in particular, where there was a massive increase proposed for the fees that would be required for hunters to go out onto state land. And we have other examples where this New Mexico came into being as a state with 13 million acres that are state land. We now have 9 million. That was 4 million acres, in many cases, the most beautiful, the most rich in resources that are simply no longer available, even in its limited public form, to folks to enjoy as state. And the pressure, the temptation to sell what would then be state land or to exploit it in a way that would leave it unusable, unrecognizable for folks who seek, whether it's that recreation experience or some of the natural resources that they find out there, that temptation would be enormous. It would only grow. It would become subject here in our state especially, where the Office of Land Commissioner is incredibly strong and, frankly, unchecked. That's just the nature of that office, is that it has, if exercised to its fullest extent, simply one person who can make all decisions for what advocates of the transfer and seizure effort claim is public, but ultimately comes down to, I think, a very deep, pure profit motive that would be beholden, as you know, as companies in the private sector is, and we're very fortunate that it is in its place, to, again, just simply to that profit motive, with no real recognition of the cultural, natural, historical values that are elsewhere associated with that land.
Well, we've only got about 5 minutes left. Is there anything else you want to listen to know about the Oregon Mountains Desert Peaks National Monument? Do you have any events coming up?
Thank you. So we have the anniversary of the signing will be May 21st, 2016. Many of the events, Silver City is wonderful for having great events that bring people to the town here on Main Street, for instance. We have the Country Music Festival coming up in Las Cruces, and we are seeing folks coming for that, but also going out to the National Monument. Literally, you can get there in half an hour to some of the most scenic places within the National Monument, places like Dripping Springs Visitor Center, very easy to access. So for folks considering coming to Las Cruces or visiting, there is all the reason in the world to come instead of perhaps spending a day, you know, spend a couple of days, spend a couple of nights there, see what is one of the most diverse monuments that goes from 9,000 feet elevation at the top of the Oregon Mountains to below 4,000 feet in Kilbourne Hole, both nationally and internationally recognized areas. So that opportunity is really just so available for people, especially in the cooler months. There's an opportunity to get down there. There is, for September, where you have a number of things. We have Salsa Fest there on Main Street. Of course, world-famous Hatch Green Chili and the Chili Festival, Green Chili Festival, up in Hatch, New Mexico. You have National Public Lands Day, National Wilderness Month. For all of these different reasons, this year is the centennial of the Park Service. We're really looking at doing an entire month dedicated in part to national monuments, of which we have three in very close proximity to Las Cruces. Of course, we have Trackways, which is for the prehistoric tracks that were fossilized there and since discovered, displayed both locally and also at the Smithsonian. We have a museum essentially dedicated to that. It also serves as sort of a visitor center for BLM. National Monument Month in September is something that we can all put on our calendar and look at. But again, the great thing, perhaps the enduring thing about public land and protected public land like we have with Oregon Mountains Desert Peaks is that any day of the year, we can, anybody listening can choose to head out there to explore, whether with the aid of a map and a guidebook or just an appetite for adventure, can go explore the Oregon Mountains Desert Peaks National Monument, the wilderness study areas that are inside of it, and have a very rewarding time doing so. And the chance for us to enjoy that, the chance for us to be very involved in the management and in the direction that takes are all things that, whether you live in Las Cruces, Silver City, elsewhere within New Mexico, or perhaps even folks who live outside of the state but who deeply love and know the treasures that we have here, the opportunities abound to get involved and to get outside. And that's a very special thing, and one that it's fun to celebrate on the radio and talking about today, and one that's fun to be out on the land with folks.
Nathan, thank you so much for joining us today on Earth Matters. It's been a real pleasure for me to share this discussion with you and our listeners.
Thank you very much, Nathan. Look forward to more.
Many thanks to Kyle Johnson, our technical engineer and all-around radio guru here at KURU. I'd also like to thank all of our listeners for your community support, feedback, dedication to our community radio. You can tune in to Earth Matters every Tuesday and Thursday at 10 a.m. and 8 p.m. on 89.1 FM, as well as listen to podcasts of each show on gmcr.org. This is what community radio looks like and sounds like. Have a wonderful day, everyone.